Let the record reflect that I did dress up for you. But I have to strip down. I mean, I'm sweating like a Mick up here. And okay, yeah.
Gary, what was that? What was that? That name that you called that disease? Hoof mouth.
Hoof and mouth. Yeah, it's a cattle disease. You know, they found her and they stick their hoof in her mouth and have trouble extracting it. Why not? We got an opinion on everything, it seems like.
Does your home group hand out chips?
My home group does not hand out chips. The way we do it, well, because we don't want to finance an outside enterprise. The way we do it is individual members of the Seventh Tradition never touches this. As individuals, wherever we can get them, we get silver dollars. And we have a member, two members actually, that stamp them with our name and our sobriety date, and they put a jewel in the border for every year of sobriety.
I get one of those, I'm just serious.
Come to my group. Parker, Thursday night, if you're not doing anything, show up, 8 o'clock. I can't even understand why you'd be there, but anyway, there it is.
We do that Thursday night, Silver Dollar.
That's what our group does since its beginning in 1968. They've done that.
Are you promoting?
What do you give out for newcomers for like the flagship?
We try to give them a sponsor. That'll do more good than a... I am serious. So we don't... Yes.
Here's a question for you. So, I've run into a previous. All right. Let me be more direct. The question is, you're in Colorado, so let's say there's three or four people going up for your delegate. You might know one of them. You might know none of them. Do you personally have some sort of process you go through to research or something like that?
I think it's incumbent on me to be an informed member, and by that I mean that I'm active in the area assembly, I'm active at the district, I'm active in my home group, and I expect my GSR to come back telling us how we vote. I'm a past delegate, so I'm welcome to attend our assembly in an advisory role. I have watched people get sober, go through the chairs, and fall down the food chain, if you will, through various levels of responsibility to become delegates. Probably I'm going to end up service sponsoring some number of them. I think I'm sponsoring 4 past delegates there now, and the current delegate as well, in service. I probably should talk a little bit about service sponsorship and what that means. Service sponsorship is, as you begin to be heavily involved in these two legacies, even the two legacies are not distinct, like the steps seem to be. And I want to submit to you that everything comes to the foundation of the Big Book. They talk a little bit about traditions in the Big Book before they were ever written. They talk some about some of the principles underlying the concepts before they were ever written. They talk about trust. If you have trust issues, dig into the concepts. I don't always trust the players in AA, because what I've seen over the last 15 years is a growing preponderance of numbers of people who aspire to these positions in the hope that they will be elected and therefore be somebody in AA. I find no humility in that whatsoever. When they get the job, they're jockeying for the next one. You've got them in your group. You've got them in at every level of service, and it disturbs me. I was shown that you make yourself available to the work that is at hand. God and the group will decide if it's your turn. If it's not your turn, you don't cry over spilt milk, you don't, you know, boo-hoo yourself out the door. You pitch in, and there's always something to do somewhere. I'm a passionate advocate of public information. It was part of how I came to AA. And when I realized that most public media knew nothing about AA, I made it my job to help inform them. I'm a passionate advocate in CPC work. I have my personal doctor did not believe in AA. She did her internship in Poland during the early 1980s, and AA wasn't in Poland in the early 1980s. It didn't get to Poland until 1989. Could they have used it earlier? Yes. She grew up in a communist country where it was illegal to believe in God. So when she got me as a patient, one of the very first discussions we had was, I told her, I'm a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous. She said, that's religion, isn't it? And I said, where did you hear that? And she said, well, it's common knowledge. I said, oh, honey, this is going to be a long day in school for you. And then I shared some things with her, and she proceeded to do what she had to do. And that was, I don't know, 15 years ago, I guess. And we've had great conversations to the point where she trusted AA enough that she started referring some of her patients to us in the set piece 12-step call that's in Chapter 7. You got them captive. They're in the hospital. She skirts all the rules, lets us in. Why? Because she trusts us. And the people are having, you know, we have mixed results. Some promise they'll never do it again, and they're drunk before the evening's done. Some of them actually get sober and come to the group. My wife got involved in it. My wife is sober 27 years in AA, and she's very active in that endeavor. The 12-step calls where it's at. And it's great when they're captive. Geez, you don't have to clean them up. Maybe 12-step call that I had to go on, and I went as Exhibit A. I was not allowed to talk to anybody. I don't want to pollute the message. Awesome. My job was to hold Skinny Frank. He weighed 130 pounds. He'd been in a bed for 3 days, drinking around the clock. You can imagine. My job was to get naked with Skinny Frank in the shower and hold him up so we could clean him up and get him to the message. And I'm holding little skinny bony Frank up in there and trying not to look. I realized I was holding me. At one time in my life, I was worse than Skinny Frank ever thought about being. And I talked to myself at that time. I was maybe 3 weeks sober. I thought, what a privilege. What a privilege this is. Did Skinny Frank make it? No. He got sober for about 3 months, went out, had one last drunk, and died. What a privilege. What a privilege. It's not for the weak-willed. Of myself, I have nothing. People ask me all the time, man, I want what you have. Really? I've got alcoholism. What do you got? Of myself, I am nothing. With you, all things are possible. All things are possible. I believe that the base of my soul, of myself, I am nothing. I have to have you. I hope you'll have me. See? Another idea around unity. See? Yes?
Can you explain a little further that concept of the upside down triangle and the end result is being the trusted servant at the end of the day. It is the highest position you have.
Yeah, the lowest.
Mm-hmm.
The groups have all the authority and the responsibility for the conduct of the future affairs of Alcoholics Anonymous. They delegate that authority and responsibility to members, starting with the GSR or an intergroup representative, maybe. They delegate it further to a DCM from among the GSRs. They'll pick somebody to be the district committee member. The district committee member votes at the area level. The area level is charged with the responsibility of electing from the committee members a delegate that will represent that area for 2 years at the General Service Conference. As it moves down the food chain of the delegates, some of them will go on to be trustees. I am cut out of the herd. I will never be able to go back to being the naive newcomer that I once was, where I couldn't be held accountable for anything because I didn't know anything. Today I know, and today I'm responsible. I'm one of 225 people in the history of Alcoholics Anonymous to have served as an alcoholic trustee on the General Service Board. If you think that doesn't cut you out of the herd, you're crazy. I am the 43rd or the 23rd member of Alcoholics Anonymous in the history of Colorado that attended the General Service Conference as their delegate. That cuts you out of the herd. The benefit is that I have obtained a ton of experience, having seen AA at every possible level. I've seen us at our absolute best, and I've seen some horrific things happen in AA that just appall me to this day. Some of the idiot things that we came up with, all trying to be helpful and all that. It just makes me sick when I think about it. There were, I wrote 19 minority opinion letters while I was on the board. Sometimes those votes were 20 to 1. I was the one. And I would write, this is not right. This is just not right. About everything and anything. They were so glad when I left. I mean, but somebody has to have a set that's willing to stand up and represent the groups. And if I've seen anything that disturbs me more than anything else, it is these, quote, trusted servants who forget who they work for. They're working for you. You're their boss. And if you don't tell them what you want, shame on you. Shame on me as a member of AA. And it's hard to be a GSR in my home group. It really is. But it's interesting. We've had 9 GSRs in a row. All of them finished their 2-year terms. All of them are still sober. I don't know what to make of it. I hope that answered. It was a way longer answer than you wanted. Or was that your question? Shit, I even forgot to ask the question. That's the essence of it. Yeah. Yeah.
In the back of the big book, they've got the short form and the long form of the traditions and the short form of the concepts. Where's a better expanded edition of both the unity and the
strength? I think sometimes we can shorten up stuff in AA to make it totally illogical. Reconcile, if you will, the third tradition short form, which says the only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking, versus the long form, which says we ought to include all who suffer from alcoholism. Two or more alcoholics gathered together for purposes of sobriety may call themselves an AA group, provided that as a group they have no outside affiliation. Much different, doesn't it sound like to you? Yeah. So what happened? I think what happened is they were trying to get it shrunk down enough to fit on a window shade. Because I can't come up with a better reason. A guy named Archie Trowbridge from Detroit was the one that first suggested to Bill that he ought to write some points of tradition or something as guidelines for new groups that are starting up. And that's how the idea basically started. And then helped him kind of pen some of it. The feeling was in 1949 that these long form of these traditions were complex. I have correspondence at home that Bill wrote to various people over time, and in there he always mentions alcoholics don't like to read. That was his experience. And so after, in one particular letter was to an area committee person, I think in Kansas, he says, alcoholics don't like to read, and then 7 pages later, he concludes the letter by, I mean, he's just like, really, Bill? They were discussing how to elect a delegate. We didn't have a third legacy process. We had no structure. Our delegate in Colorado, the first guy that went, Mert Robbins, it turns out was the only guy from Colorado that was at Cleveland. So 19 people sequestered in a motel room decided, well, Mert, God, if you got gas in the car, go ahead. And that's how our first delegate was elected. Since then, of course, we've evolved, or devolved, as you may choose, to where we have a pretty good process right now, third legacy procedure. Some of you are probably familiar with it. And there's been a wealth of information written about the third legacy. The intent was to eliminate the personalities and to vote it up, straight up and down, based on the feeling of the body at the time, that of the qualifications of the person. When I was a delegate, they sent a guy that was 4 years sober from Kentucky, I believe, who had been a GSR. And nobody on that area committee stood for delegate that year. And they said, will anybody stand? We'll take a floor nomination. This kid goes, I don't know what it is, but I'm willing. The kid showed up in New York City. All the mail was coming. He just threw it away. He didn't know what it was. He really didn't like to read. And he shows up at the conference. Somebody had to call him and say, man, you got to get a plane ticket and get out here. Do I? Okay. He shows up. I mean, this guy was green behind the gills. But guess what? He did his job. Why? Because people helped him. Three staff members took him downtown and bought him a Brooks Brothers suit. He showed up in a pair of coveralls. It's kind of coat and tie there. He didn't know. And nobody hung around the area to tell him. Isn't that sad? What's our obligation? The reason I'm here, folks, is I've had this experience. My obligation to the entire fellowship is share that experience wherever, whoever. That's my obligation. And how somebody can't see that in their own life is just beyond me. It's beyond me. Talk about selfish, self-centered. So you're not getting the best up here today, folks. You're just getting me raw as I am. And my perspective on that experience has changed over time. I'm more appalled by the things that I believe we made mistakes on today than I've ever been. I'm less kumbaya about the things that I thought we did well. I would have expected that out of us. But I think we did some things horribly wrong. Horribly wrong. And what is a past trustee supposed to do? I don't know. There's no role for us. I observe, a year ago, prayer and meditation, the thought occurred to me, Gary, you have got to stop being such a critic. You're scaring the shit out of people. They think the world's coming in on their shoulders. AA's not going to be here. You've got to stop scaring people. Stop being a critic. Start being an observer and a commentator. I'm just one voice in the small world in this big ocean of AA. I'm just one cat. My obligation is, when I see something that clearly is wrong to me, is to take the time, draft up a letter, make it to where it's in English and doesn't use a whole lot of four-letter words, and send it. And live with the result. I'm hoping that somebody else is thinking maybe like I'm thinking on something. I don't want to get into all the details of all of it, because it's just wah, 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 wah. It's what it is. But there are principles that underlie everything that we do in AA, and I want to believe that I'm a little quicker today at seeing the underlying principle more over the difficulty that we have with that principle than I've been in the past. I've come to believe that you'll never run out of God in AA. You'll never run out of God. And they just knew cats like me were going to come along, pretty sure that I would. And so they just gave me more and more and more to do. They didn't head the chapter into thinking. They headed it into action. And we got to take action. Yeah.
Throughout the book, they make reference to the distinction between somebody who has recovered versus recovering. And one of the examples is working with others. To introduce myself as an alcoholic who has recovered. Depending on where you're at in the country, huge division between groups and people saying, arguing that you were always going to be recovering, and other people who are going to say, well, the job's been done, I've recovered, it's like it almost kind of comes across as, at times, some people use it as an elitist kind of but I kind of go back to something that you were saying, that the gift of work in the 12 steps is sobriety and the enjoyment of my life and the experience that I have. And I just didn't know if you had any experience around the distinctions between the two.
I wrote an article for the Grapevine. Ames Sweet was the editor at the time. He's a good friend of mine. I liked Ames. I wrote an article when they asked for articles on the difference between recovering and recovered. And I sent the article in, And I put at the bottom of the letter, I dare you to publish this. And he sent a letter back, said, screw you, here it is.
What episode, what grapevine was that in?
I think 98, one of them. It's in there somewhere. I don't know. I'm 30 years sober. If I'm still recovering, the implication of that statement to me is there's no hope. And I don't believe that. My first meeting was, I couldn't even walk in my first meeting. I had to lie, I'd stand up here and say, I walked into my first meeting. Oh, that's a bullshit deal. They had to carry me into my meeting because I couldn't walk. And a guy at the end of the meeting took one look at me, came up to me and said, God, kid, we don't get them like you very often. But you can recover. You can get well. Don't ever let anybody tell you you can't get well. And I've never forgotten that. That guy gave me more hope in those two sentences than I've ever had in my life. I thought I was going to die and I couldn't get it done, folks. I was trying to kill myself by parts and I couldn't get it done. And when this guy gives me this simple little soliloquy at the end of the meeting, I mean, I cannot emphasize enough how much that touched me in my heart. And I feel like at that moment in time, our souls connected. It was the first time anybody told me I could ever get over what it was that had me whipped. And I am so thankful that guy stuck his neck out and said, you can get well, kid. You can get well. I don't know what it is that we're doing with new people these days. I know what I see. And what I see is a whole lot of glad handing, glad you're back, love you till you can love yourself. Crap. And nobody giving them any message of hope. The message of hope is take the actions of change and let's see what happens. What do you have to lose? You take the actions, you get the result, and then you become a part of this thing, see? Yeah.
And come behind it. So at what point would one recognize from recovering to recover? And then when we're processing the steps after, are we saying at that point, I'm a recovered addict? So at what point do you begin to differentiate recovering to recover?
When I introduce myself in a meeting, I try not to do anything to distract from a simple introduction. I can't improve on perfect. I'm a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. Members of Alcoholics Anonymous understand what that entails. It's presumed you're alcoholic. I don't say, I'm Gary, I'm a real alcoholic. The book says, what about the real alcoholic? He may or may not be a continuous drinker, hard drinker. That's what the book says about real alcoholic. But we say real alcoholic to sort of separate ourselves as we would when we say, I'm an alcoholic and an addict. I'm different a little bit this way. And then the guy is, I'm powerless over alcohol. He's over here. We embellish on perfection and improve on it. I'm Gary, I'm an alcoholic. And that says what I am and my personal adventures before and after up to this minute in time describe who I am. I don't do that to people. I'm not trying to set myself apart from. I'm trying with every piece of me that I know and with God's help to just be one of you. Because as I explained, I'm cut out of the herd. I can't go back to being stupid, boring, and glum. I can't. I've seen too much. I'm trying to be a member amongst members, no greater than, no less than. For God's sake, let me be with you. Don't separate me out. And I have to be cognizant of my role in that. I can't set me out. in a workshop, I'll be a little more open than I will be. And my home group didn't even know I was a trustee. I never thought it was important. My sponsor knew. He never broke it off in me in the meeting. When I got rotated out, we were having an election for trusted servants. Somebody, one of them deacons, looked over at me and said, "The kid here, he's been a little AWOL lately. He probably needs something to do." So they elected me the secretary of my home group. I wrote very colorful minutes. And then David launched on an emotional, frothy appeal of which nobody considered. I put that right in the minutes. And they laughed, they'd approve the minutes, you know. We had a big time with this stuff. And God, it gave me something to do when I had a point in my life coming off being a trustee. I needed something to do. I needed something to do. And I didn't want to be special. I just wanted to be part of that gang again. God, I hate half of them most days. But I love them all. I love them all. I'm a nobody, man. I'm just a drunk trying to make a day here. That's all I am. Yes, sir.
Going back to his question, so we approach this prospect and we give him the guarantee and the promise that he can get well.
Right.
So when does... Is there a line that we draw so they know when they're well again? Or is that something you leave up to the guys that you sponsor and they know when they're recovered and gotten well?
If you work with enough people, you'll realize that at some point in the game, the light will come on. I don't know when it's going to happen. I had one three weeks ago that literally came to out of some kind of sobriety fog into wives. Oh my God! I mean, really? To wives, folded him up like a lawn chair, and the light went on, and he's still on fire. That guy needs a fire extinguisher after him. He got it. Whatever it was, something in there. For the first time, a lot of times, if I'm out of time, it's like, well, we'll skip all the parts that are indented in that chapter. I'm so glad I didn't that time. I took him line by line. Wow. And it was somewhere in the classification. The type 1, 2, 3, and 4. I think he found himself in there. Wow. He said, "I've never read this chapter. It's over 7 years. Never read this chapter." It was like a week he had three sponsees. He couldn't buy a sponsee before then. So he got somebody to work with. And I mean, this guy's lit up like a Christmas tree. Oh. Alcoholics, we are sure God wants us to be happy, joyous, and free. Most drunks will sell out for happy. Get a little happy going. Folks, happy is 28 seconds. It's the throw to home. Close play at the plate. Maybe it's a hot dog at a ballpark. Orgasm. It lasts but a short time, but then you want more, and so we sell out for happy. Joy, on the other hand, lasts a lifetime. I've been present at the birth of all three of my children, drunk for two, one sober, and a normal person would experience a tremendous amount of joy as a result of that. That didn't happen to me. I thought the joy circuit was out of commission. And then I began to experience joy watching you get better. And I could not believe where you came from to where you are now. And I experienced joy at a level that I had never experienced before, knowing that I was not the message, knowing that I was just a piece of what had transpired, and finding great love in that, and great acceptance and great satisfaction, and that I had grown a little bit in understanding and effectiveness is what I've agreed to do. I have been, and that has given me joy that transcends every kind. If you didn't get better once in a while, I'd just have to go kill myself. But once in a while, just when I'm desperately needing somebody to get better so that you can lead for me, because I can't anymore. I'm out of faith, I'm out of conviction, I'm out of gas. and you come in my life and you sit down with me and we get together in truth, my God Almighty, some of you have experienced this. I know I have because you're nodding. There's no words I can say that can ever describe that adequately. But you get it. If you haven't experienced this, there's no words I could say that I could ever adequately explain it. You have to experience it in your own way in the now. Right now. God's time is right now, folks. Right now. I wanted to talk for just a few minutes about something I alluded to earlier. It's called meeting-based sobriety. You'll recall many, many moons ago, we discussed the evolution of AA from a 12-step based operation that was responsible for most of its growth up through about the early 1970s, at which time we changed how we do things to have, we just throw meetings at the problem. That's what we do. And we do that by our practice. We also invented a little statement, if you want to start a new group, get a coffee pot and a resentment. We are like great sprinters. We start, or out of the blocks really good, but we fade in the back quarter to the point where some of us are walking across the finish line, if we even get there. Our practice has been, if you don't like what's going on in the group, go start another group. When we do that, you never have to face what's wrong. You just perpetuate the problem down the street. And that's what we've done. And many of them cannot be groups because they're not. They have outside affiliations, they're not self-supporting, they have additional requirements for membership perhaps. Perhaps they have a public relations policy which says, we like being in the news. Yeah. And believe me, there are some that do. Folks, we have worn meetings out. All of the concerns about who's there are being solved in the meeting. We have little gimmicky things like we go around the room, everybody introduces themselves, and if you don't introduce yourself right, they call yourself on the rug. I'm Tyrone, I'm an addict. You're out of here. That's not the way to solve it. 12-step work at the meeting starts at the door. You've got to have three lines of greeters to get through. If somebody don't know you, they're going to say, come here, what are you looking for, man? Well, I'm an addict and my counselor told me I should go to AA. Well, this is a closed meeting. So we think probably you should go to an open meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous or a meeting of an appropriate narcotics, CA, whatever it happened to be. We have a good working relationship with Narcotics Anonymous and Cocaine Anonymous in our community. Our meeting starts at 8 o'clock on Thursday. We took the leaders of Narcotics Anonymous, who meets at the same night at 8 o'clock, and we took them to dinner. And we said, would you guys be interested in starting your meeting a half an hour later? They have hour and a half NA meetings there. Would you be interested in starting your NA meeting at 8:30? So that if we have somebody that shows up in our closed meeting who is obviously an addict, we can have time to get them from our place to yours. We don't send them there. We take them. We take them. Yeah, we're a little inconvenienced. One of us might miss half the meeting or something like that. And we don't just take them. We take them up to the door and hand them off. And hopefully their group has greeters so that they're not making that 1,000-mile walk 100 feet alone. We do the community a great disservice when we start willy-nilly referring people and we don't take the time to make the sacrifice to take them there so that they're not going alone. Somebody brought them to our place alone. Or maybe they came on their own. Or maybe they don't know what their story is. Maybe they've got a little bit of both. Maybe they're not sure. Hey, come on, man. We'll talk to you. We got to do our 12-step work outside of the goddamn meeting. But we're letting the meeting solve this, and it's not the place. Another thing our group does, highly controversial, we appoint chair people to chair our closed discussion meetings with a subject out of the big book plus the doctor's opinion, and they call on only members of Alcoholics Anonymous to share. Only members of Alcoholics Anonymous to share. So if you're there by mistake or by design, and you're not a member of Alcoholics Anonymous in our closed meeting, you're not going to get called on, probably, unless somebody knows you. A lot of people think that's too much power. No. We are members of Alcoholics Anonymous. It is our meeting. I'm personally not in favor of closed or open meetings. Either one. Why don't we just call it what it is? It's a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. As such, AA members are going to conduct it, and they are going to be the ones that participate. Nobody else gets to participate. And then we took the best public relations tool that we ever had, the open meeting, and aborted it into some kind of a perverted open topic discussion meeting. Jesus. And then, wherever you're from, go ahead and chair. So then the way over sick Al-Anon is chairing the meeting. Let's talk about, and I'm not picking, I'm sorry, this just happened, and so it's fresh. Let's talk about alcoholism and the family. How come this group doesn't ever read chapter 9 of our big book? And everybody sits there. Well, I'm going to. And she starts, and pretty soon she's read the whole chapter and half the meeting's gone. And then who wants to comment? God, here it comes. Incoming, mortar rounds coming in. I think time is the most valuable commodity we have. Why am I going to waste my time in that kind of an endeavor? Does it help people? Maybe. It wouldn't help me. I'm so glad I didn't get that message. It is our meeting. We are responsible for the content, the conduct, and the character of our meeting. I want to believe that if the person I love the most in my life ever had a problem with alcohol, I could take them to my home group, and there was a better than even chance that they were going to get something like an AA message. We profess great love for one another, and yet then we'll sell them down the river. Well, there's a meeting at the club. There's a great place to go to a meeting. Over here, it's open, but it's kind of crazy. But would you meet me there? No, I got to watch football. We do that. That happens every day. Every day. And the people say, there's no 12-step work. The treatment center took it all. That's bull crap. It's more 12-step opportunities today than there's ever been. Ever. We don't want to answer the call. We don't want to go the extra mile. We don't want to sit down with them and hear their story before they get to the meeting. But what are you here for, man? What seems to be what you're facing? What are you looking at here? That's 12-step work, man. That's what it is. We don't want to do that. Because God, we'd miss the meeting. And God forbid we'd miss the meeting. And that's what I'm talking about. The outgrowth and the outfall of meeting-based sobriety. If I don't make a meeting, I might get drunk. You might. But if you don't start to try to help somebody else, meetings ain't going to make it. You ain't going to keep yourself sober. Any kind of alcoholic at all, you're not going to stay sober in meetings. Meetings are where we what? Meet. And then from there, we go out to the coffee shop, to the kitchen table. We get that book open between us, and we start knocking it back and forth. That's how it happens. That's where it happens. Last night I alluded to a thing that I want you guys, each one of you in your own way, to answer the question, what is AA? Ninth tradition says AA as such ought never be organized. What is AA as such? What is AA? To me, AA, I think I may have already mentioned it, is the action of two liars sitting down trying to sort through this. Okay? Sorting out the truth. That's AA. Everything else is incidental to that. Meetings exist so that that can happen. Greeters exist so that we can welcome you and find out a little bit about you if we don't know you. And it's not intrusive. You don't have to be a Nazi to be a greeter. Ah, never seen you before. You're not an alcoholic. You know, we got that kind too. They have some kind of scope they stick up their poop chute, and I guess they know. I guess they know who's an alcoholic and who ain't. All alcoholics coming to AA are liars. They don't even know their own story. They think they do. Oh man, the IRS came to my house. You know, that's part of the story, but it's not your whole story. There's a reason they showed up, I'm sure. See? And we perpetuate the myth time and time and time again. We'll let the meeting solve the problem. It will not solve that problem. And what do you do about the one that's pissed off? Angry. Some of us came here very angry. If I could have mustered it, I would have had some. But I had some other difficulties. So, we got that to contend with. What do you do about the guy, this actually happened, who walked into the meeting and opened up his coat and he had a bunch of grenades strapped to him? That was interesting. A lot of people hit the deck, went under the tables like, that's going to help. Remember those duck and cover drills back in the day? Yeah, right. Set off a nuke outside the window, and that desk is really going to help me. Crazy. And then somebody says, oh, he's like that. Yeah, kind of leave you hanging there. We've had them come in with big old 44 Magnum strapped to them, rough, tough, hard to bluff, you know. We find it's helpful if you unload it. If it makes you feel good, you can wear it, but just not have any bullets in it. Or Barney Fife them. Yeah, I'll give him one bullet. Yeah.
I appreciate your expounding on the responsibilities, the inherent responsibilities of the group. Responsibilities of the sponsor. All right. I've gotten to this place where me and another... my fellow liar for sorting out the truth. What are the responsibilities that you've seen and experienced at the sponsorial level? I mean,
it varies as widely as the individual. Some people are needier than others. Some people are fiercely independent. Some are there's every kind of personality. I have a way that I go through the steps with somebody who's never been through the steps. And I always sit down with somebody and I want to hear their whole story. If they're new, I want to know what they're up against. I mean, if they're going to got to go to prison in 3 months, I mean, we're going to have to accelerate it a little bit, okay? I'm not going to have a year to do this, or 9 months, or whatever it would happen to be. I think I told this story at one of these talks. I just recently, 6 years ago, a guy with 26 years of sobriety came up to me, very well-known local guy, he's a former sheriff in the county, and he said, I'm told I need to write a fourth step. I said, who told you that? He said, my friend over there. I said, well, what do you think? He said, I think I need to write a fourth step, and I said, okay. And then he kind of looked at his shoes, and I said, what do you need? And he said, I don't know how to start. You have to make the not making a face face. Do you understand what I'm saying? You say, okay, why don't you come by the house tomorrow? And let's sit down, let's see where you're at here, okay? Thank you. And so he shows up. And I said, well, I think maybe the four steps, maybe not where you're at. You ever been through the steps in the big book? Of course. I said, okay. He was a cop. He probably couldn't help it. He said, I said, when was this event? When did this happen? In treatment. I said, when was that? He said, 26 years ago. I said, okay, here's what we're going to do. You're going to come over here. This is a good time for you? Yeah. You're going to come over and we're going to sit down and we'll see. Here's what I want you to do before you do. I want you to set aside everything you think you know about Alcoholics Anonymous in favor of a new experience. Okay, I'm not going to denigrate any of the work that he did. By hook, crook, somehow, he ended up 26 years sober. The guy was physically dying. And he had, guess what, folks, unmade amends that had to be made. God could not be done with him on this planet until he got a chance to make those amends. I didn't know that at the time, but I suspected it. So We did the long way, man. We went line by line. God, it was painful. And he resisted a lot. And I said, well, okay, you're in my house. Clearly your way is working well. Why don't you share that with me? He said, I can't. You know I can't. I said, okay, just open your mind up a little bit and let's talk about some of these things. Okay, so we get to the third step. And I take the third step on my knees. It's not in the book. Holding their hands. They read the prayer to me. And I hug them. I'm not a hugger. I'm a handshaker. Okay, that's what I am. Sorry. I like hugging the girls, but I'm not big on you guys. Kind of. Sometimes I feel like they're patting me down. I don't know. So I'm like checking for weapons. So anyway, this thing evolved, and I ended up helping him write his fourth step. And in the fifth step, he got it. He got it. He told me things he'd never told anybody, things he'd been carrying around for years and years and years. Guilty, remorseful. You guys have experienced this miracle. There's nothing new here. I'm just showing you that even an old coot can get it. I just don't know what day it is it's going to be that they're going to get it, see. My job is to be there and to honor the commitment I make to them, ever how long it takes. This guy now is on fire. I mean, oh my God, this last 6 years, I think he's put maybe 100 people through the steps in the way that it was done with him. He's retired. He has nothing but time. He works with women. He works with men. It's, when he goes down the street, he's a big tall guy. He's about 6'8". And when he has these little like goslings walking after him, it's just, it's cute. I mean, you can't say it any other way. And this guy is on fire. Yes? Caught you right in the middle of a bite, didn't I?
Oh, did I interrupt you? I'm sorry.
No, you're good.
No, okay. I'm new to the GSR position. I'm trying to figure out how can one be most effective in that position.
You have a service manual? Well, let's start there.
All right.
Get a service manual. Read the description of the GSR. Get the group pamphlet. Read it. Good documents to have. Get a service sponsor if you haven't got one. Have you got a sponsor? Does your sponsor know anything about service? Good point then. Good. Sit down, talk it through. Yeah. That help?
Yeah.
Yes, ma'am.
What do you mean by service sponsor? I've heard that term before.
And yeah.
I don't know what it means.
Somebody who's can navigate these two legacies. Somebody who maybe is familiar enough with the concepts, they can at least give you an introduction to them. Personal introduction. I've been knocking all these around, and there's no clear demarcation. I hope that's an example that you can take to show how interconnected all this really is. See, without the unity, without the group unity and the group conscience that provides 12-step opportunity, we haven't got any 12-step opportunity. And as I mentioned, they're all coming in the door. They're all 12-step candidates. This one here connects us to the whole of Alcoholics Anonymous so that I can go to Pink Shirt over there, go to her group, except if it's a women's group, which that's a whole other subject, and I can find out from you what you're doing to be effective in this area of carrying this message. So service sponsorship is somebody that knows a little bit about this, that can share it with you in the hope that you'll pique some interest in you. And then we'll help you navigate it when the questions start coming.
So can I have a service sponsor on top of my normal sponsor?
Yeah, I'm not in favor of that personally, but I realize it's the case. We've got so many step people that are mechanics. They're step mechanics. They know how to get somebody through the steps. But they don't know anything about the other.
Right.
Don't care, don't want to know, blah, blah, blah. Okay, you might have to get a service sponsor in that case. I try to provide all three kinds of sponsorship. Part of it's because of my experience, but part of it's because it's my obligation, I think. I never thought that any part of this was off limits for me. I love it when they say, you say, would you like to represent us at the intergroup? And they'll say something like, oh, that's a politics. I ain't doing that. When two people get together, there's politics. I don't care. Hell, even when the two liars get together, there's politics. So I'm not afraid of that objection. I want to know really what's at stake. Why won't you do that? Yes, sir.
Do you Yes, you're doing a great job up there, by the way. How often do you carry yourself through the stuff?
I'm actually getting ready to start again. It's become apparent that I've got a little more clutter than I'd like to have. I think I can be honest here. I hope I can. I'm 30 years sober and I'm going through one of the worst financial debacles I've ever faced. I've got a kid that's 16 years old that I love with every part of my heart, and she is running amok. Her mother is inconsolable. I got a lot going on. Okay, that doesn't diminish anything that I've told you here today. This is the conditions as they're being presented to me. And so it's becoming very apparent that I need to sit down and go through an inventory. And, you know, basically the steps. And I have to do that same thing. I have to do that set-aside prayer. Say, whatever I think I know, you know, that's going to require, I think, a Hoover vacuum cleaner. Get all that out. I've got to be willing to set that aside in favor of a new experience that will be sufficient under my needs so I can face these challenges. The last time I've been through the steps formally with another man was about 3 years ago. And obviously that has about a 3-year shelf life. So I'm admiring people that want to go through the work every year. Okay, great. But I've observed something else in that. Inventory can become an obsession of self. In fact, I took a fifth step from a guy 10 years ago who had been smoking pot for 5 years. And it was bad enough he was doing that, but then he used the pot to bait the junior high school girls and take them down to the motel and have his way with them. And he'd been doing that for about 5 years as well. And he's one of these guys that believed in taking the steps every year. And I was incredulous. I mean, I've told somebody here that I've sat and heard fifth steps where I needed a puke bucket. But I cannot ever let that guy know I'm judging him. I can't do it. I have an obligation to fulfill. And sometimes that means I'm going to have to make the not making a face a whole bunch. I opened this discussion by saying things that are said in the fifth step can never be revealed. Okay? But you're going to hear a lot of things. I'm just saying. My obligation is to protect the anonymity of that guy, any gal that I take a fifth step from. I asked him, I said, how do you reconcile this? You're claiming 23, 24 years of sobriety. You've been smoking pot for 5 years. How is this reconcilable in any spiritual way? He said, well, if it don't change in the next year, it'll hit inventory next year. So I believe that inventory can become an obsession unto self and also a means of justifying our excesses. And that is saddening to me. Saddening to me. The guy went out on crack and died. We reach a point where the drinking world no longer wants us. What are we going to do when the sober world no longer wants us? We're screwed at that point. So all of the people that are in here that are on the frequent flyer program, remember that the fellowship as a whole is never going to give up on you, but individual members are going to get sick and tired of you. And at the point at which you're back in for this time, why don't you do something different than you've done before? Why don't you do something radically different? Why don't you take these actions of change and see what happens? What do you have to lose? We're not going to love you till you can love yourself. Loving you is what got you here. We'll love you until you can find it within your stinking rotten soul or your beaming angelic soul to love somebody else, really. Yes, ma'am.
Well, are important and both are part of being balanced. But my style is to take someone through the steps. Like, you need the steps, otherwise you're not gonna. But I've had proof where they said, no, this, you don't work for me, and then they go to a fellowship-based meeting or recovery program or whatever, and they're fine. They seem to be fine. I mean, I don't talk
without
to them.
Without taking the steps?
I don't know.
Okay.
I mean, I don't keep tabs on them, so it's not clear to me.
Yeah. Yeah, you haven't taken them through the steps, so they've been through five, but...
Yeah. And
so...
And I've seen that over and over, and it seems... And I don't want to have a prejudice about it when I approach people, or I'm approached by people.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, so I don't really know what my question is, but... Except, what would my responsibility be if I sense that someone... I mean, I meditate before I accept a sponsorship role, but if I have the sense that that person
that's why I start out with the story. I want to hear the whole story, all the dirty rot and everything. The book says we can't live long until we tell someone all our life story. It says it in the fifth step. But today's fifth steps don't look like the fifth steps used to look like. We read our inventory, which is much different than telling someone all our life story. If you look at chapter 7, the answer is in there. It says, if he wishes to tell you his story, that's where I get that. And makes a decision. Okay. Get their story up front. Find out what they're looking for. And guide them, take them to the right room. Sometimes that's the difficulty.
Okay. I got a question, though. I'm dovetailing with what she just said. I mean, I think it's something that we've both kind of touched on. It also says, if you're satisfied, he's a real alcoholic.
Right.
So, if I'm not satisfied...
Sometimes I have to say... I think as an AA member, it's incumbent on me. I've got 3 contacts for Cocaine Anonymous in Denver. I've got 4 from Narcotics Anonymous. I got 6 Al-Anons because they fade in and out. I've got, I've probably got 20 phone numbers that I can call, and I can take them to them, or we can meet somehow, and I can tell them what I know, and I hand them off.
Okay. What if they just had a problem with drugs and alcohol? Remove the drugs and alcohol, their life's going to get better. However, they feel the need to participate on some level within one of the 12-step fellowships.
So what do you think about that?
I find mixed messages being shared when I hear them share in meetings. You know, I'm just going to meetings, you know. It's coffee beforehand. We go to a game on Saturday. Everything's great. Life's never been so much better. Huh. And my thinking is... my life started to suck when I stopped drinking. Now I got my alcoholism kicking in.
So what did that tell you?
That they're not an alcoholic.
That you'll act on that decision until further evidence is provided.
So is it incumbent upon me to express my observation?
I just tell them I don't think I can help you without qualification.
That makes sense.
In the last session, I think there's several, if not everybody's interested in, can you just give us a description of what it's like to take someone through the traditions and take someone through the concepts? Let's say a group of us want to break off after this workshop, say, okay, well, let's sit down and look at these traditions, let's sit down and look at these concepts, so we can actually have experience now with what you're talking about, as opposed mm-hmm. to us going in the meetings now and talking about this.
Mm-hmm.
Where do we find the stuff? And I know there's a bunch of stuff where they talk about the traditions in the concepts. There's the long form. How can you describe what you do?
Yeah. I do not use the 12 and 12 for traditions. I use AA Comes of Age. Why, you say? Well, because it flows like the Big Book. It just goes from one principle into another. There's no chapter breaks. I think the chapter breaks do a disservice. They make you think that these ideas are separate unto themselves, and they're not. They dovetail. So to me, A That Comes of Age is the better presentation. If they insist on reading about it, again, remembering most alcoholics don't read, then okay. The rest of it is, we'll throw the idea up. I always use the long form, never the short. And we'll throw the idea out there. And I'll tell a story or two. They respond to stories. They don't respond to lectures to be endured. I feel like that's a lot of what I've been doing here. But there's no excuse for it. It's just my sense that I'm getting here. So they like the stories. That's what they like. And I've got plenty. I could tell them about a clubhouse in Roswell, New Mexico, where bingo every night of the week became the primary purpose of the AA group. And then the mafia showed up and said, we charge 20% of the big. And they said, God will provide. And they blew up the goddamn bingo hall. And then the group decided, well, it's okay, we've learned our lesson. And 4 years later, they started another bingo game, and the same identical thing happened. And here's the headline in the local paper: AA bingo racket destroyed by bomb. So when you get explosives involved in a building destruction, guess who gets to come to the party? The Secret Service, the FBI, and the BATF. They all did investigations. And the little group, they folded their tent again, and we'll never do that again as long as we live. 10 years ago, they passed a motion to start another bingo game. I don't know where they're at in it now. I just, after third time, I can't get interested anymore. And they love stories like that. Like, oh, really? That can't happen? So I tell them some stories. Yeah, okay.
Can we take a break for 10 minutes and
come back? Yeah, and then we'll wrap it. Sounds good.
Yeah, so come back 10 till, and we'll go to 4:30.
Yep.